This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Hello and welcome to Working Like Dogs on Pet Life Radio. Thank you for joining us. We're your hosts. My name is Marcy Davis, and my co-host is my amazing service dog, Fenway. And we're excited to be with you today to talk about our favorite subject, working dogs and working animals. And today we're welcoming two guests to the show, Kara Malott, who is the manager of client services with the nonprofit assistance dog organization NEEDS, and James Chip Harrington from the Massachusetts Department of Correction. So get ready for a powerful conversation today about the life-changing partnerships between service dogs and their handlers and the unique collaboration between NEEDS and correctional facilities that helps make these partnerships possible. So come right back after these quick messages as we welcome Kara Malott and Chip Harrington to the show.
You know the expression, cats have nine lives. Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life. How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. And it helps control free-roaming cat populations, too. Learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Working Like Dogs on Pet Life Radio. Hello, Kara and Chip, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Marcy. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. I'm so excited. Hey, Chip, I can't wait to hear about what you guys are doing. And Kara, I want to ask you first, introduce us to NEEDS. What's your mission? What kind of dogs do you train? Tell us all about it.
Absolutely. So NEEDS is a nonprofit organization. We are located in Princeton, Massachusetts. So if anyone in the New England area skis, we're right near Mount Wachusett in central Massachusetts, beautiful area. We are celebrating our 50th year as a nonprofit.
Wow, that's impressive. Mm-hmm.
We're very proud of our organization. We breed, raise, train, and match service dogs with individuals who have disabilities, both adults, children, veterans. We also have an assistance dog program. Some folks refer to it as a facility dog program, where we are placing dogs with professionals in helping professions, such as teachers, social workers, hospital employees, courthouse employees. And these dogs are serving really as therapeutic dogs for the populations that those professionals are working with.
That's wonderful, Kara. Well, tell us, what all kinds of disabilities are your dogs trained to work with?
Sure. So our dogs are trained in several different categories. We specialize in training service dogs for people with mobility issues. So if folks are using a wheelchair or a walker, a cane, maybe they struggle to pick things up off the floor, reach to open doors or turn off lights. We have a category of dogs that are specifically trained in that type of task work. We also have service dogs that are trained for people who are deaf or hard of hearing. So those dogs are trained a little differently. They are going to alert people to sounds in their environment that they may not necessarily hear. So things as a car approaching when they're in the community, or maybe they've dropped their keys or their phone. A dog's going to alert to that. So fire alarms in the home, smoke detectors, people knocking on your door, your cell phone ringing Our service dogs for hearing do amazing work for those folks. We also have dogs that are trained to work with kids with autism. So that's more of a facilitated model where the family's involved, and those dogs are trained really more to help kids build up their skills, whether it's motor skills or socialization skills or just sensory integration, task work. Those dogs are wonderful working with those kids and families. Then we also have a service dogs for veterans program where we're matching service dogs with veterans who have experienced combat-related PTSD and other physical disabilities.
That's wonderful, Kara. And that's a lot of different jobs for dogs.
It certainly is. It's great, though, because it gives us the flexibility. You know, every dog, as I'm sure you know, and I'm sure Fenway's got his own little personality.
Oh, yes.
Their skill sets are all different. Their personalities are different. So it really does give us the flexibility to be able to sort of funnel the right dogs.
Yeah, because that's a lot of different diverse needs, which is just fantastic. Yeah, that you can do that. The mobility, the hearing, all of those different types of disabilities. That is so fabulous. Well, Chip, tell us, how in the world did the Massachusetts Department of Correction get involved with needs?
Well, first let me say that I'm really excited that your dog's name was Fenway, because that means he's a Red Sox fan.
That's right. That's totally what he was named for. And he has a sister named Wrigley.
Okay. Oh, well.
Yes.
Baseball. That's awesome. That's great.
Yes. Yes.
So, you know, we've been partnering with Needs, I believe it's since 1999, and it's really been a wonderful partnership for not only Needs, but really for the Department of Correction, and obviously the people who ultimately end up working with the service animals. We have the puppies in three different facilities, mostly in the eastern central part of the state and that we're working in. I've been associated with the Needs program for about 10 years now, and I do say this on a regular basis, that it's really one of the strongest programs that we have behind in each facility, so that it just really improves a climate in the entire institution for everyone involved. The men that work with the dogs, they are really picking up a skill that is really transferable to the community. It's a long process. Each puppy has a primary handler and then a backup handler. So really, when you get involved in the program, you kind of start as a backup handler. You're learning the process and get to work with the primary handler. And then eventually you can work your way into being a lead handler. And then, you know, I'm sure we'll get into the details, but we work with a lot of volunteers in the community, that the dogs go out on weekends and spend some time in the community, kind of just, you know, different senses, noises, and just different situations that they are getting used to.
Yeah, I was wondering if the dogs stay at the facility all the time, Chip, but you're saying, do they go out every weekend? Is that the protocol?
Yeah, that is the protocol. So we call them weekend puppy raisers. They're volunteers, and they usually typically will show up on a Friday evening, anywhere between, say, 3 and 6 o'clock. And a staff member will bring the dog out to them. Then they, you know, they spend the weekend with the family. They'll go to the beach. They'll go to the ball. They'll go to the movies. And those volunteers are carefully vetted by the Needs organization, just to, you know, obviously make sure they're appropriate, make sure the environment is appropriate. And then they come back either Sunday night or Monday, and kind of get back to work. And while they're out in the community doing training, those weekend handlers are also trained by Needs. So they're, you know, using the same commands and, you know, making sure that there's consistency across from what's taking place in each facility and into the community.
Yeah, well, I can see how there are just so many benefits to what you're describing. I can just see how beneficial it is for the dogs to have those experiences, really intimate experiences with different handlers during the week, their work, and then being out on the weekends. That's such a great concept of how you guys have designed that. I love it.
Yeah, I mean, that's credit to Needs, certainly. You know, that's their program, and they, as a partner, they kind of take the lead when it comes to, you know, how the dogs being are trained. But just to kind of, you know, each week a trainer from Needs will come in, spend a couple hours, and in some cases a full day with the handlers. We have designated spaces that are air conditioned, and they have everything that they need to learn to be an appropriate service dog. And the men will work, and I sit in on these trainings on a regular basis, and the men will work with the dogs all day long, but they really kind of get their core skills while they're working with the Needs trainer. And then, you know, throughout the rest of the week, They have access to the training space. They have their own separate yard area where the dogs and the needs trainers, once they take off that service vest, they get to be a dog again, right? Because once the vest is on, they're working. So they, you know, they have their recreation time. And like I said, initially, when there's a puppy in the community like that, it really just kind of helps the entire climate of the institution, because everybody who's there is working through, you know, their process to get themselves back into the community. And what this does is really kind of support our goal of reducing recidivism and just encouraging the men and women who are working with the dogs to really focus on healthy, clean living and getting back and being, you know, really strong members of the community.
Oh, it's just, it's beautiful all the way around. Yep, it's win-win. Well, Kara, tell us, how old are the dogs when they actually go to CHIP's program?
So we are in several different prisons. We are in 5 prisons throughout Mass and Rhode Island, and we do have 1 prison where the pups go in very early, so they're 8 weeks old. So that's sort of our puppy prison, right?
Uh-huh. Oh, can you imagine? Oh, that little bundle of joy and yummy smell coming in. Oh, right? Nothing's better than puppy breath, in my opinion. Yep. But they're babies. Yeah.
Some pups will take a different journey, and they will be placed with a full-time puppy raiser for anywhere between 7 to 9 months. And then at the end of that time frame, they will be placed with an inmate handler in one of our prisons. So they'll be a little bit older. What's so unique about the prison pup program is that this population of people have 24 hours a day to dedicate to these dogs. So it's very unique. There isn't really another population that really has the time to focus on the training. So what we find is that our pups that go through the prison pup program, and it's about 90 to 95% of our dogs at some point will be in one of the Department of Correction facilities. The success rate for those dogs to be matched is incredibly high, because the inmate handlers are spending so much time with these dogs and working on their skills. So it's quite amazing. It's quite amazing.
That is amazing. 90 to 95% of your dogs. That's great that many of them get exposure to that level of attention.
They do. They do. And the inmate handlers are working on more high level skills in a lot of cases. So these men and women that are training these dogs in this program, they build up a wonderful skill set to be able to, you know, train a dog to turn off a light or open a door. I mean, that's pretty amazing. So it's beneficial for the handlers in the prison pup program, because they're learning a transferable work skill that they could certainly be employed when they're released. And to our benefit, we wind up just with these amazingly trained dogs. People say it is a win-win. It truly is a win-win.
It truly is. Yeah. Well, I can only imagine all the benefits for the dogs and the handlers, because of not only the transferable skills for potential employment, but just the life skills that they're learning, the patience, the follow-through, the consistency, all of those things that so many people haven't experienced, whether they are incarcerated or not. They haven't had that level of relationship with a canine, which, again, in my opinion, that is one of the greatest gifts in the world, to have that level of trust and working with another being, that canine, of what you get from that. Yeah, it's just so, so powerful.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take just a quick break. We have so many things that we want to still ask about this incredible program and the work that they're doing. So come right back.
As your dog or cat chewed through yet another set of sheets?
I get it. I've been there. But instead of replacing them with more scratchy, low-quality bedding, why not treat yourself to what Oprah and Kris Jenner sleep on every night? It's called Cozy Earth. And yes, it's as dreamy as it sounds. Their bamboo sheets and pajamas are buttery soft, cooling, moisture-wicking, and they actually get softer every time you wash them. I'm talking next-level snuggle mode here, folks. These sheets have been on Oprah's favorite things list 7 years in a row, and there's a reason why. Cozy Earth gives you the softest, coolest sleep of your life. And just for Pet Life Radio listeners, I scored you an exclusive 41% off. That's the biggest discount they offer anywhere. Just use promo code PETLIFERADIO at CozyEarth.com and sleep like the celebrity your pet already thinks you are. That's CozyEarth.com, promo code PETLIFERADIO. You'll thank me at bedtime.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Working Like Dogs on Pet Life Radio. We're visiting today with Kara Malott and Chip Harrington. Kara is from Needs and Chip is with the Massachusetts Department of Correction. And we've been talking about the incredible work that Needs does and this wonderful program at the Department of Correction. And Chip, tell us how many people are participating in the program and how did they get to participate? What's the selection process for people who are incarcerated to get to do this work?
Yeah. So as far as the numbers, I don't have the current numbers right in front of me, but each facility has anywhere between 6 and 12 lead handlers. So like I mentioned before, there's 2 handlers for each puppy. So that would mean, you know, we've got 24 to 30 people involved in the program. You know, we do have quite a list of men and women who are interested in getting into the program. So there's an application process. Each facility has a staff member that is considered to be a liaison. So they do many things for the incarcerated population, but part of their responsibilities is being the liaison between the DOC and Needs at that facility. So an individual would approach the liaison, submit a letter of interest. From there, the liaison will review them all, work with their deputy superintendents and other people behind the walls, take a look at, we have a thing called, it's called classification, that all incarcerated people kind of have a profile. They'll take a look at their classification profile just to ensure that, you know, these people are involved in programming, quite a bit of programming. So one thing that we do with the DOC, we look at stats a lot. And if you look at stats for somebody who maybe has a substance abuse issue and maybe needs some educational programming, if they are involved in programs that combine substance abuse and education, we have found that statistically the recidivism rate, and I can get into details about that if you want, drops down to about 7.8%. And recidivism essentially just means that somebody who leaves our incarcerated facilities and if they don't come back, that's a successful reentry into the community. So we look at those stats quite a bit. And if you look at the Needs population, the people who have participated in Needs, I mean, that rate is near zero, meaning that when somebody is in our facility working with the Needs organization and, you know, they return to the community, they're not coming back because they have, you know, number one, earned a really impressive skill, but number two and three, there's empathy and sympathy and all sorts of other attributes that they pick up from this program here specifically. So when we're vetting somebody, we're looking at, is this person vested in the facility that they're at the moment with programming? Are they doing all the programs? And once they go through that process there's an actual interview where they sit down with the liaison, do the interview process. And then after all of that, which is quite extensive, and if they're given the green light, then they start as that backup handler and they start very slowly working their way into the program. And that takes that could be 18 months or more before they're, you know, truly ready to be a primary handler.
Wow. Those recidivism rates, that is phenomenal. I mean, I've never heard of that low of numbers. That is just fantastic. Wow. You've got some great data. No wonder you have it in so many different facilities. And you said it's both men and women, Chip, that participate?
Yes. So for Neat specifically, it's male facilities. We do have one facility that is for women. And we have partnered with a few other programs as well, too. So they are working with one of our other dog partner programs. But Neat specifically is in 3 of our male facilities. And as Kara mentioned earlier, one of our facilities up in Concord is where the puppies go. They start, you know, at that 8-week-old puppy phase, and they stay there for approximately 6 months. And then once the handlers or once the needs trainer, you know, recognize, okay, this puppy's ready to move on, then they'll be moved to for more in-depth training at that point.
And so, Chip, when the program was started, what all did you have to do at your facilities? So you said that there's a separate exercise area and relief area. Yeah, tell us about that. What did you have to do? And how did it impact your staffing? What kind of staffing oversees this?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, yeah, I was in corrections in 99, but I wasn't doing this program in 99 when they first came in. But there is a commitment on part of the DOC to ensure that, you know, there are appropriate training spaces. So yeah, they had to take a look at the facility. Okay, where's a good spot that we can turn this into a classroom? So we did. We took a classroom and turned that into a specific needs training facility. So yeah, that took a little bit of commitment on part of the DOC. And then, like you said, staffing was important as well too. So they made the commitment to also assign a DOC staff member to the needs facility as well. And then, you know, there are other people who are involved too. Like I said, when the dogs are going out for their weekend handler visits, there's other staff members that will, you know, walk the dog from the housing unit and training facility out to the front gate so they can be handed off. But it's really a commitment, you know, DOC-wide, right from the commissioner all the way down to myself, who is the liaison to the needs program, to just make sure that we can do everything that we need to do on our side to make sure that needs is being successful into the community. Because ultimately, right, this is all about supporting people in the community. So whoever's going to be receiving these highly trained dogs can live the best life that they can. So it's a commitment on behalf of Commissioner Jenkins, even right on up to the governor to ensure that we're doing everything we can to support the community.
Well, it's just so encouraging to hear that you have that level of support, because it does. It takes that. And I just so love to advocate for these kinds of programs, because as you've described, I mean, it just has such a ripple, positive ripple effect, that it impacts not only the dogs, the individuals who are the handlers, but the community. It impacts everybody, because you are having such a positive impact and they're getting skills that they never knew they had. Probably, I know I didn't when I started becoming a handler. The dogs impact you in ways that you never imagined. I mean, they really open you up and make you aware of things that you never had even thought of. So I just love it. Love, love hearing about this. Well, tell us, it must be so hard for your participants to let these dogs go when it comes time for them to go on to their next level in their life. Tell us about that. And do they get to have any knowledge or awareness of where their dogs are going and what impact those dogs are having?
They sure do. So as far as it being hard, yeah. If you talk to the men, you know, they do obviously build up this incredible bond with the service animal. But I can tell you, more than anything else, there's a level of pride that they have, knowing that these dogs are going to be going and helping some people. And they'll tell you that, you know, yeah, they're sad when they say goodbye, but they put their head on the pillow at night knowing that they've really worked their tail off to benefit somebody in the community. So it's more pride than sadness when a dog is, you know, goes on to their forever home. But one thing that we do that I think is unique, I'm not sure if other states do this, but we have this thing called a reunification weekend. I think many of the dogs in the needs program, they stayed here in the New England region. So we put together a special event where it's in the evening, where we'll have the recipient of the dog. We welcome them back, and then we open our doors, have a separate area, have a little bit of some food. We've even had music there before, where they can meet the individual that actually trained the dog. So that actually, talk about emotional. That is probably one of the more emotional events that you could ever participate in. The handlers get very choked up. The person who receives the dog gets emotional. And from my perspective, just kind of sitting on the sidelines watching it, you can see the dog that, you know, spent 18 months, 2 years with this one individual in a correctional facility. They recognize them right away. But when that vest is on, they know that they're working and they'll stay right by their person's side that they need to do it. But their tail's wagging. They're certainly excited to see them. And then when the handler comes over, like you said, they just have this really emotional connection. And it's, I know you said win-win before. It's really win-win-win, because it's win for us, the DOC, and the handlers, win for the person receiving it, but win for the dog, because they're living this amazing life with purpose as well, too. So,
well, I was going to say, I bet the dogs are as prideful as their handler to say, look, meet my person. Yeah. Look what you got me ready. And that's just so beautiful. And it is full circle. I'm just so thrilled to hear that you do that event That is just so lovely and so powerful. Like you said, for everybody, I've got goosebumps just thinking about it and just imagining that experience on both ends as a person with a disability that has been given this incredible gift, and then the person who spent so much time with this little canine in a very restrictive environment. So that's just so amazing to turn that into such a positive, positive experience. Well, this is just fabulous. I mean, there's just, to me, this is a no-brainer. Every facility throughout the country should have that. But I know that's not the vision everywhere, but I'm so glad to hear. Massachusetts is always a leader in our country. So I am so happy to hear that you're doing that. And I hope other institutions will create something similar. So Kara, I have to ask you, so you mentioned at the beginning of our time together today about NEEDS is celebrating 50 years. That is a monumental accomplishment. Tell us what you guys are planning to celebrate.
50 years. It really is amazing. When we started 50 years ago, we started as a service dog for hearing program. We rescued dogs from shelters at that time and trained them to be hearing dogs. It was an experiment. So we were really one of the first agencies in the country to train hearing dogs. So pretty amazing. So we're very proud of that. This year, our major event is taking place in Boston on September 26th, Get Dressed, Give Back. It's in the Seaport District. It's a great event for folks. So if people are interested in coming and supporting NEEDS, definitely go to our website, NEADS.org, needs.org, and check us out. We just have a whole other host of events happening. We have a big barbecue that celebrates our puppy raisers. So that's a great time. So for the next, 12 months or so, we're going to be planning some really cool events, and all that information is going to be on our website. So definitely encourage folks to keep checking the website for sure.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, I'm guessing that as many programs as you have, that you still need additional puppy raisers in addition to all these wonderful handlers that Chip has told us about today. Is that true, Kara?
We do. We need puppy raisers. So if folks are interested, Instagram, and we're, anytime you look us up, you're going to see an adorable dog doing something amazing. So definitely hit us on those social media platforms as well.
Yes, everybody, check them out. This is just wonderful. Well, thank you both, Kara and Chip, for being with us today and for the beautiful work that you're doing to just have such a positive impact on so many people's lives. So thank you for being with us today.
You're welcome. It was really great to be here. Thanks for doing what you're doing. This is great to kind of get the word out on some of these programs like this.
Thank you.
Marcy, we really appreciate you putting out the good word about NEEDS.
Well, it is my pleasure. Yep. And you guys continue doing this incredible work and come back and see us again and tell us more about what you're up to, because I know you're going to have even more facilities and be doing even greater things. So thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And thank you, our listeners, for joining us. We'd love for you to be with us. And you know that Fenway and I love to get those emails from you. So please keep those coming with your questions, your comments, or ideas for future shows. And you can reach us at Marcy, M-A-R-C-I-E, at PetLifeRadio.com. So thanks so much for being with us, and take good care.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand. Only on PetLifeRadio.com.